Today I was listening to another podcast by a music producer in Germany. His name is John Sein. If you want to check him out on YouTube, he's a young man, maybe in his mid-20s, has a girlfriend. I believe he might live at home or maybe alone. I'm not sure. Maybe he lives with his girlfriend. But he owns a studio in Germany, and he has been doing that for, I think, maybe 10, 15 years. He's been producing, DJing, and today he did a vlog, or yesterday, called Why You Should Not Become a Music Producer. And in some ways, I wanted to talk about a similar thing, maybe call it Why You Should Not Be a Pastor or Be in Church Leadership. But I actually don't want to go through all the negative things about being a church leader or a positive or the positive things. I actually wanted to talk about why I am a church leader and what does it take to be a church leader. And basically, just like he concludes in his vlog, if you love it, then you will persevere. And that's really the truth of what I want to say to you. It really comes down to you loving it. And this goes for any area of your life. You don't have to be a music producer or a church leader. You might be an entrepreneur, a business person. You might be a student, or maybe work in the healthcare industry. Whatever you're into, you have to love it and persevere if you're going to succeed. And so I want to tell you a little bit about how I have seen that to be true in my life. How have I persevered? Why am I still doing this at 50 years old with very little pay, with I don't even get benefits at my job? And yet I continue to do this, and I want to give you the reasons why so that you can also think about your own goals, your own career. You might be stuck in a job that you can't stand, that you don't really love. The statistics are that 80% of people don't love their jobs. But how do you have the guts, let's say, to then move on from your job and do what you would love to do? So that's what I want to talk about today. So being a church leader has been the most fun and the worst experience of my life. I think that the spiritual part of it is definitely there, but I don't think it really, being a church leader, whatever you are, you know, meaning a pastor or any sort of position in a church, it's not really about you loving God. I don't mean to say that that's not a requirement. Of course, if you don't love God, you shouldn't be a church leader. But if you love God, you don't have to be a pastor. Obviously, you know that. You can be just you can be an athlete, you can be a doctor, you can be a YouTube influencer and love Jesus, love God. Obviously, right? So, you loving God isn't necessarily a sign that you should be in church leadership. Loving people isn't also a mandate or a reason why you should get into church leadership, even though church leadership is about loving people and helping them grow and connect with God and having compassion for people. Of course, that's a huge part of what I do, but that's not the reason why. That's not a reason for you to go into church leadership. I would say that church leadership requires those two things. You need to love God. You really have to love people. But I would say it is something that you just can't get away from. I've tried to get away from church leadership. I went for about 5 years trying to start businesses, to get a master's degree in public administration, to work with nonprofits, to raise money, I was even selling solar panels for a while, just trying everything but church stuff. I tried hard, and some of it worked, especially the video and kind of media stuff that I love. but I also tried being just a professional musician. All things that I love, at least a few of those things I love. And I just, I failed at most of those things. And I think I failed because they just were not my passion. They were just options, not really my passion. And I think all those lessons were so important for me. I had to go through that leaving of church as a profession to discover if I really wanted it. And now, since I've been back the last 7-8 years, it's been failure after failure. The first place that I was at, I failed at that. It wasn't really a good situation for me. The second place, the same thing. I felt very disconnected. And this is doing the things that I love to do, church leadership. And then the current place has been maybe the hardest one yet of my whole life. And so you would think, well, why do you keep doing it? Shouldn't that tell you something? You know, I used to think that. I used to think that if there is no fruit, as people call it, or the Bible would say, then you should move on, like go do something else. But I think actually it's the opposite. When there is no fruit, that's how you know if you're supposed to do this or not. This is not about income or about having no other options. As I said, I tried for 5 years to do other things, and there is a world out there for me without church leadership. But I can't get away from it. It is what I love to do. It is what I've been doing my whole life, and that's no reason to do something. But my point is that it's something I've always been committed to. Now, in terms of effectiveness, and you know, and I think, I don't know where that comes from, right? This notion that maybe it's even from the Bible that if you love something, that you should be effective at it. I mean, you think of a principal or of a teacher. How do you measure success? Of course, there's all kinds of metrics, and the district will evaluate you and your principal will evaluate you. But if you love teaching, what bad review will keep you away from teaching? None. You do it because you love those children and you believe that you're helping them grow. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. The terrible pay doesn't stop you. The horrible hours doesn't stop you. The endless work at home, the thankless job part of it. As a teacher, as a pastor, we're very similar in our professions. They don't stop us. I've had people want to get rid of me, criticize how I stand on stage, criticize my glasses, my hair. I've had people call me the devil, a false prophet. I've had people in leadership question my children, criticize my color of my skin. I mean, you name it. Church leadership has been the worst experience of my life, but it's been the best experience of my life, and I cannot get away from it, and I never will. I will always continue to do what I love to do, which is the church, to be in the church. Now, I've been through also the whole thing of, well, I'm not qualified, I'm not gifted, this is not what I'm supposed to do because I don't have a doctorate, or I don't have a church of 10,000 or even of 100. There are all these negative things that pop into my head all the time. Mostly the lack of success and people's criticism. And I don't know why I've been late to the party, kind of a late bloomer in understanding that those two things, meaning people criticizing you and a lack of success, are actually good signs. This is really an interesting revelation that I'm going through. Whereas my head and maybe logic would tell you that those are not good signs, I actually believe those are great signs. I mean, all I have to do is look at Jesus. He was crucified for goodness sake, for spreading a message of love. He died with all 12 of his disciples leaving him. And as far as we know, only a few of them came back, like Peter and John, and then, of course, Paul, who wasn't even one of his disciples. But, and yet, how could we say that Jesus was a failure? Now, obviously, I'm no Jesus, but my point is, he's our example. He is my example. But I think what happens to me and to us in the American culture is we compare ourselves, I know I do, to Joel Osteen or to Cottonwood Church here locally or to John Gray or to these superstar pastors and churches that go from churches of 8,000 to 20,000 to 50,000. And then I look at my church of 50 and I think, well, I'm obviously a failure. But it's Pastor Alegria, who I remember, he was my grandma's pastor for 10, 20 years. And this man was full of life. And he also drove an ambulance to make ends meet, which thankfully I don't have to do yet. Now it's called Uber, right? Or Uber Eats. I have actually always dreamed of driving a truck, but let's put that on hold, God, okay? Let's not make that happen just yet. But why isn't Pastor Alegria my success story or my dream? Because what, he's a failure? In whose book was he a failure? My dad pastored a church of 200 people, and I think it remained at 200 for the whole time that he was there. Didn't grow. And so I think that this idea of success, and now thinking psychologically, I'm an Enneagram 3. For me, my addiction is success or my gift. But then my failure is my deceit. I lie to myself all the time, or I try to cut corners to make things work. If I was a different number, I wouldn't be driven to succeed as much as I am. I would be more thankful. Now, let's say in my current context, there have been people that have left. We've lost thousands of dollars per month in offerings. But you know what? I'm thankful because it's been the right change that had to happen. Because part of my gifting is to be a lightning rod, to be a prophet, to divide, basically. I don't mean to divide people, but I mean to separate, maybe that's a better word, the wheat from the chaff, meaning the good from the evil. I don't think anyone is evil. What I mean to say is that sometimes organizations, and definitely this one that I've been a part of is an example, they go through very difficult seasons where the only way out is to divide and conquer, to count your losses and to move on. And this current church could be shut down. They might get rid of me and bring a brand new spanking millennial with a beard who's 26 and wants to love the city. All those things are possible. But I believe in my heart that regardless of those things, that I will never give up, that I will persevere in this calling called life, church, and specifically church leadership, because this is what I am created to do. Now, how do you know if you are created to do something or if you're supposed to be in a job or stick this out? It's not a lack of discouragement or anxiety or depression or burnout. Every pastor that I know, every human that I know experiences burnout, a loss of interest, a loss of passion for the job, discouragement, depression. That's just called living life in the 21st century. But what qualifies me is the fact that I keep going and that there's a fire inside of me called, I don't know what it's called. It must be God. It must be God. It must be my life speaking, as David Brenner's amazing book is called, Let Your Life Speak. My life must be speaking church leadership, and it is. I've tried to run from this calling, as I said. I failed at this calling, as I've mentioned. I have criticized myself, all these things. And yet, here I am in this beautiful Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. And I was up 2 nights ago till 3, 4 a.m. praying, asking God for guidance and direction on how to lead my church forward. If that isn't crazy, then I don't know what is. If that isn't passion, I don't know what is. If that isn't something divine, something crazy, or all of the above, then I don't know what is. It has to be at that level for you. This year and many others, I've been on the verge of quitting. I've been, as I said, try to be pushed out, and it's been so difficult. I have felt so discouraged. This year I dealt with a back stomach ache for 6 months, from February till July, whatever that was, 4 or 5 months. Every day I thought I had gallbladder issues and I needed to have some gallbladder surgery and I was going to die in the hospital bed. I am telling you, this thing will kill you if you let it, being a church leader, being any human being, right, that's trying to help other people. You might be someone who cleans homes or who works at a restaurant or does construction for a living. And you have to ask yourself, is this what I love to do? And you might say, no, I hate my job. And I don't know if we can afford as people to say, oh, I'm going to do what I love. I work with a lot of immigrants and people that have not a lot of money or options. Most people that I know, they do things out of necessity, because it's what they have to do to provide for their families. It's not a passion or a love. Sure, maybe they have found some pleasure in what they do, and now maybe they're trying to start a business from what they do, but it's survival. It's not upward mobility. People aren't moving to buy a bigger house. They're moving to afford rent. Instead of having to pay $3,000, if they move to an average part of town, maybe they can pay $1,200, or at the most $1,400. Gone are the days, at least in my neck of the woods, with the people that I love, of buying a second home or a third home, or having, I don't know, paid vacations and having great health insurance and having all your kids have their own bedrooms. I mean, that's for our parents' generation. And maybe for a few Latinos or people of color that bought their homes in the 80s like we did, or who somehow maybe they are professionals. And of course, if you're a professional, you have a better chance of making more money and therefore buying a house. But it's not even necessarily true. I meet a lot of millennials, young men and women in their 20s and 30s, that live in a one bedroom. They have no kids because they can't afford it. Or maybe they have one child. Maybe they have a dog or two. And yet they're working 2, 3, 4 jobs and they're educated and, quote, U.S. citizens and all the rest. It's, you know, unless you live in the fancy part of town, the life that I live, that I have chosen to live, the life that my wife and I have given ourselves to work among the poor, the immigrant, the widows, and the people in need, it's a different world. And I love it. And it has terrible challenges for me and for them. For me, as I've mentioned, it's all of these tensions and discouragements, and you're always afraid of, am I going to have enough money next month to pay the rent? Am I going to make it next month or next year? Is there going to be any money to pay me or to pay my staff? How is this all going to work? I mean, these are just the things that everyone deals with. And being a church leader, or like being a teacher or a painter, it's all the same. But what drives you? It has to be a craziness for what you love to do. And there will be all kinds of opposition and difficulties along the way. If you're in your 20s and you're discovering that this is hard, that even though you have the degrees or the experience or the passion, you can't get your foot in the door. You're applying for jobs everywhere and everything is just, it's just not enough. You have to say, do I love this enough? And now young people these days, they bounce around from job to job. Every year they move to a new place. Obviously, the Gen X generation, my generation, and the ones before us, we weren't that way. We stayed at one place for a long time. Now, because I am a creative and I'm in church leadership and just my personality, I do bounce around a lot. I've had maybe 8, 9, 10 churches that I've been a part of, and I'm glad for all of them. I never plan to leave any of them, but sometimes I must say I had to leave because it just wasn't the right thing for my family and I anymore. But yeah, I don't think there's really any right or wrong way to do this as far as having one job for 30 years or having 10 jobs in 3 years. I don't know. It really depends on you and your personality and maybe even your career. But one thing I know is that in order for you to keep at it, you have to love it and you have to never give up. Now, I remember asking a lot earlier in my life, or even these last few years, how long until I succeed? And there are all kinds of numbers out there in terms of turnaround churches, 6 years, and all these things that statistics say of how long it takes to turn a church around, meaning a dying church, which is what I've been a part of now, to a thriving church. I'm in year 3, and you have to throw that out the window. Yes, of course, those in power and the people that have the money, of course, they all want to see results. They don't want to give you money unless they see results. And for them, the stock owners or the stockholders, they're evaluating you every month, it feels like. And that's how I feel for sure. But I would say you have to throw all that out the window in terms of 3 years, 6 years, 10 years. You have to say, I'm going to be here for 30 years and do this for the rest of my life. I love the Methodist Church and the Presbyterian Church. I believe this is true of them. They have pastors, I think, in positions for 7 years, I believe, at a time, or maybe it's 9 years. I love that concept because, and the pastor gets paid, you know, a base salary for those 7 years without evaluations or consequence. That is a wonderful setup. For goodness sake, these pastors, they are doing this out of love. How can you put all kinds of CEO type of measurements on this man of God? Especially that are working with impoverished people in impoverished areas with zero to very small resources that are basically making things up as they go. How can you then expect them to be at the Amazon CEO and have some sort of chart on how is business going? You cannot. You should not. I believe it's a sin from the devil to measure pastors and congregations in impoverished areas in a way, in the same way that you would measure Amazon or Apple or Google. It's just impossible. You're talking about dealing with old buildings, with aging people, and with immigrants and orphans and widows. Where will the money come from? It is an act of God. It is, you have to have a reserve somewhere. From heaven, from resources, from rentals, from basically you have to have a secondary financial plan that's going to fund 80% of your ministry expenses. Now I'm talking about church business, which is another passion of mine, meaning the financial part of it. And the pastor should not be evaluated against metrics of what they call butts what do they call it? Butts and pews? Pews and something. I don't know. Butts and buckets. There you go. Meaning people and buildings, you know, or offerings, I guess. It's impossible. That is what churches in suburban places do. Impoverished areas, anyway, I'm getting too into it. As you can tell, this is a passion of mine. How do you persevere? You have to love it. In spite of all those things, you have to love it. You have to have a crazy love for this thing. Against all odds, and you never give up. And all the failures, you say that's part of it. And all the discouragements, you say, yep, that's a good sign. And all the people that can't stand you, yep, good. And all the people that maybe want things to be the way they used to do it, and they leave, yep, thank you. May God bless you. And all the immigrants that are coming, and all the poor kids, and the elders and the seniors that are showing up at your door because you, again, minister in these impoverished areas, welcome to the kingdom of God. And then those few families that are crazy enough to want to support you and to help you in your own vision because they also are as crazy as you, thank you, Lord. That's what it looks like. And this is prescriptive to any area. As a student, this is what it looks like for you to endure. If you're a YouTuber, if you want to study to be a doctor or a psychologist, or if you want to paint, or if you are a health expert, if you work till 1 a.m. and you're just working 90 hours a week, this is what it looks like. And then you write books in the night, at night, or you build guitars, or you write songs for your passion project, this is what it looks like to never give up. Now, where is this all headed as far as mental health and exhaustion and burnout? I think those are all very, very difficult questions. I've experienced all those things: burnout, depression, weight gain, anxiety, all you name it. And I'm not the only one. You have to get creative. You have to find ways to manage your health and your marriage and the things that you love to do, and to avoid evil and to avoid falling into sin and to not give in to the temptations of the world. I had a friend recently who was at a, what you could call a thriving church, just recently quit, just last week. Just burnout, church burnout. And I'm sure it dealt with politics and Trump. I think he's not a Trump supporter, and his church is, and so it just was too much. This is what it looks like to pastor in the 21st century. If you believe in what you believe in, meaning in his case, that the Trump agenda is wrong for the church and for the country, you're going to pay a price. But he is better off, you would say, following his heart than to compromise his beliefs for a paycheck or for a position or power. And this is the path, and this is what I'm about. I would rather be true to myself than to compromise to get a paycheck or to have some sense of stability, which doesn't exist. You have to be honest with yourself. You have to be true, and you have to keep at it. For how long? For the rest of your life. And if you haven't found that thing, then you need to keep looking for that thing. And that thing may be your parents, or your children, or your husband. It doesn't have to be a career. It might be art or music or healing people. It doesn't have to be money or success or houses. It probably isn't both. You have to be willing to die, as Jesus calls us to do, for the sake of the call, for the sake of what you love to do. As long as you need to. I saw this, maybe I'll close with this. I recently went through a training on turnaround churches and dying churches. And they have, I think it was 9 keys or ingredients to success or to turn this thing around. And I think number 7 or number 8, one of the key ones he said, is for a pastor to be at a place for 30 years. 30 years. These days, people want pastors to succeed in 2 or 3 years. I remember literally having a board member tell me, well, Trigg, you have 2 years, otherwise you're out. This was at a dying church, the one that I'm at now, with 50 people. And all of these problems, financial, anyway, it's just outrageous for people to say that, especially people in power. the statistics say, and it just makes sense in my heart. You have to be at a place for 30 years. Now I'm 50. That means I would be 80. So I don't know if I'm going to be around even at 80, but I can tell you with my whole heart, as much as I can say, I will be at any place, this one hopefully, for 30 years. Not for me, but that's what it takes to succeed. Or I don't even like that word. That's what it takes to turn something around, to see something through. Will I have a church of 1,000? I have no idea. Probably not. Not in this place. Maybe we'd have to move to a new location. But will I persevere and never give up because I love the people and I love God and I love what I'm doing? Absolutely. And you have to ask yourself the same question. Well, I hope these tips can help you in whatever pursuit you are following. My prayer for you today is that you will discover that thing that you love more than anything in life. And again, it might be a person. It might be your family. And may God richly bless you to never give up. Thank you so much for listening. Please make sure that you share, rate this episode on iTunes, give me a 5-star review, and I will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The David Trigg Show. Find the complete archive at davidtrigg.com or subscribe for free through the podcast app on iTunes or Stitcher on Android.
Each week, we bring you a message of joy, success, and personal power in spite of fear, anxiety, and depression. Because as we like to say, though there's pain in the night, gozo comes in the morning.